Welcome to Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and explore ways to help students and teachers thrive. Thank you for tuning into this episode, The First 5 Years, Why Early Childhood is Everyone's Business. Today, the Education Foundation's President and CEO, Jennifer Vine, talks with Michaela Buchanan, Chief of Staff of the Children's Movement of Florida, a nonprofit, nonpartisan movement of Floridians advocating for the policies and investments that help each child in Florida thrive in their first 5 years. Together, they will explore the connection between early learning and a student's success later in their education.
Well, Michaela Buchanan, I am so excited to have you on our podcast. We certainly have a long history together, and your work experience has taken you through some wonderful, wonderful places. We met at the Consortium of Florida Education Foundations, but then you went on to the Florida Chamber Foundation, where you served as the Director of Early Learning and Literacy, and now you bring all of that experience to the children's movement. So really want to first welcome you to the podcast, and then very much want to understand more about your transition and how all of that back work has inspired you for your current body of work. So welcome, Michaela.
Oh, thanks, Jennifer. It's such a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, I long miss the days of the consortium and all things education foundations. It, of course, has a big place in my heart for the work that you do and your team do every single day and the folks across the state. What a joy it is to be at the Children's Movement of Florida now. To your point, I've had a little bit of a winding path to get here, but I could not feel more blessed to finally land in the role that I really truly feel like is the dream role. It is sort of at the intersection of policy and advocacy for an issue that I think is so core and foundational to many of the things that I care about, and I think many people care about, you know, Florida communities, you know, our state, and ultimately our society, and that's early childhood. So thanks for having me, and I'm really excited to be here.
For our listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell us more about the Children's Movement of Florida, what you do, and what are the current initiatives that you all are undertaking?
Oh, yeah, of course. So thank you for the question. So at the Children's Movement of Florida, we're the statewide advocacy organization for all things birth to five. And so we're really looking at a future where all children in Florida can thrive in their first 5 years of life. And so what does that look like from a policy perspective? Certainly programmatically, there's lots going on in local communities, from great nonprofits, from school districts, from early childhood care centers, parents, families obviously have a huge role to play in the first couple of years of development before kids get to our K-12 system. We're doing all of that. We're listening on the ground. We're having focus groups. We are advocating in Tallahassee at the state legislature, and we're also sort of mobilizing folks across the state from all walks of life to talk about why early learning matters for educational outcomes, yes, but also, like I said, really for everything that we want to be true for all children to have opportunities to be successful, both in life, in school, and beyond high school, of course, that is. As it relates to the work that we're doing, sort of, if you think about it in a bucket approach, I like to talk about it as, you know, community engagement, which kind of heard. So we're doing lots in local communities to bring people together, convene partners, really understand issues from different perspectives, perhaps that, and then bringing those to Tallahassee, which is sort of our second bucket, which is legislative engagement, identifying priority areas, issues that we can work on to move the needle for our children and families, the one about the early learning, child health outcome data, as well as parental support, right? So what does it look like there? And then I would think business engagement is actually our third one, which is where the experience of the Florida Chamber really has benefited me well here. We have a big initiative where we're trying to get businesses to have more family-friendly policies and practices in their environments. And so that looks a little bit, you know, different everywhere depending on the business scope and also the industry, right? It could be flexible work environments, it could be paid leave, it can be a stipend offset childcare costs, which we know are high. So those are kind of our three primary bucket areas of the children's movement and what we're all about.
Well, I can certainly see why, Michaela, you were selected for this role, because your background covers all those buckets. It really does. So I think that's really fantastic. So when you think about those three buckets, when I was listening, it sounds like you all are a robust organization and you're taking the advocacy and the policy work, sometimes working concurrently, sometimes maybe catalyzing the advocacy into policy. When you think about like your highest priority areas, what would you say is the one, maybe the one or two things that is top of the list for the children's movement where you want to affect change?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thanks for asking it. So as we look at 2026 legislative session, I think it will mirror and a lot of the work that we've done the last 15 years. And that really focuses on early learning. And so when we talk about early learning, we think about the system and early learning in Florida. Often what we're looking at and trying to positively affect is really access and affordability for all families, all children. So that looks like ensuring that the entrance criteria for eligibility, which is a pretty weedy issue, but that it's as big as it possibly can, as expansive as it can, so that more families, more children have access, even if they're making just above minimum wage in our state, struggling to afford cost of that quality early learning experience. And so oftentimes what we see in many places, Sarasota is really no different. You have two issues going on simultaneously. And so just to sort of give that example, you've got in some areas, there may be not enough seats. So mm-hmm. you might have a one-year-old that you're really struggling to find a family childcare home or a center that has a spot for a one-year-old at the time that you need it. So you can, you know, if you want to go back to work and that's what you're choosing to do, you can. And then even if you find that slot, if that slot costs you $15,000 a year, which for many people is, you know, double a car payment, it's college tuition for many who have kids in that space, it's really hard for families, and that's their lowest earning years. And so again, we're kind of always looking at those two issues at the same time as sort of our some of our highest priorities, I would say, and this session is really no different. We'll continue to look at expanding access so that more kids can have that quality early learning experiences before they get to kindergarten.
Yeah, and that, so you're really opening my eyes, and I hope to the listeners as well, as to why the investment in those first 5 years is so critical. So can you maybe elaborate on why that is such a focus? And then the second part of the question is, when you look at the policy that's taking shape from it, I know, like, for instance, Representative Fiona McFarland has been advocating quite a bit and championing in the Capitol for early learning. And a lot of it has been around the affordability, which you mentioned. So can you maybe take that two-prong question and go take a go at it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Representative McFarland's a fantastic champion, and we're so lucky to have her in the House on this issue. I'll take the second part first, and then I'll work the other way. And so for the listeners, you're looking at, in the state of Florida, 70% roughly of all households, that's the census data, right? So 70% of all Florida parents with children under the age of six, so this is before they get to kindergarten, right, birth to five, 70% of those parents, all caregivers are in the workplace. So whether it's mom only, mom and dad, mom and somebody else, whatever, however many caregivers are in that house, they are all in the workforce. And that means that those 70% of parents need somebody else to watch their children while they are at work, hopefully, right? Mm-hmm. No, that's the ideal scenario. So yep. Somebody else needs to be there. And oftentimes, that is not grandma or grandpa as it was many years ago, right? That's not often the case right. for many families. And so that's why access and affordability to center-based care, to family childcare homes becomes such an important issue from the economic perspective, like current workforce issue of retention of employees. The Chamber had a great study that Representative Farland, I know, looked at when passing Florida's childcare tax credit, which was an opportunity for businesses to engage in the space, looked at that report that basically said, look, this is the number one issue, childcare cost, childcare issues, the number one reason that parents in Florida with children under six quit their job in our state, and that it costs our state $5.4 billion a year to not solve this problem and economic impact. And not only are they quitting their jobs, and that's a big, big number, it's the number one reason, right? But this is about 150,000 people every 6 months. Again, wow. All census data. You know, but it's not just about the current workforce, the current retention of employees. It's also about the future workforce. And so when we start to think about the skills that are learned in the first couple of years of life before they ever get to our schools, the K-12, you're talking about achievement gaps that can literally be seen in early literacy before children turn two.
Right.
So many will be familiar with word gaps and things of this nature, but the serve and return between an adult and a trusted caregiver and a child, vocabulary that's being built. So if that's happening before children turn two, then everything is sort of thinking about it as a compound interest before they get to kindergarten. It's no shock that children who go to Florida's voluntary pre-kindergarten program in four, and that's really the best year we have data for, for student outcome data, do 25 percentage points better than children who do not go to VPK on our kindergarten readiness exam, right? So they're going to outperform their peers when they enter kindergarten. And the really shocking part about that all, which maybe that wasn't very shocking, right? Kids who have early learning experiences show up to kindergarten ready. Sure. What is shocking is 75% of children who enter kindergarten behind, they will never catch up to their peers per our Department of Education data. And so we can see this playing out in the numbers. And unfortunately, there is a difference between children who are growing up in lower socioeconomics. And so these things just stack upon each other. And so, you know, now they're entering kindergarten behind. They're not catching up by first and second grade. Therefore, they're not doing well in that third grade reading test. They're probably not doing very well in the eighth grade math test. Even if they graduate high school, they're unlikely to be super ready for the workforce or college. And so these skills and all of the things that are built in the first 5 years of life are really, really important. And that's just sort of the academic side, right? And not to numb people with the data on that, but also on the non-academic side, right? Again, going back to my chamber days, what do employers often say? We probably can all fill in the blank in a sentence here. It's like, we can't find the skilled workers we're looking for. People, you know, don't have organization skills anymore. They don't know how to plan, work in a team, communicate effectively. And lo and behold, believe it or not, those employability skills, those are being wired in the first 5 years of life as well. So children are learning how to manage their own time, actually how to organize, right? Like little blocks into piles based on color, shape, or size. They're learning these things, again, before they get to kindergarten. And so it's really interesting to me, but, you know, so it shouldn't be shocked, right? If children enter kindergarten having not had these really incredible experiences in those first couple of years, that not only do they not catch up academically, but they're not going to be prepared for the workforce.
Right.
So that's why it's such a big deal.
You answered that question very beautifully. And what it leads me to is I can clearly see the advocacy behind the work. And you made a very strong, you know, case statement, value proposition, if you will, for investing in those first 5 years. Locally in Sarasota, we've seen a lot of that movement happen. We hear often of the first 1,000 days. So I'm curious to hear from you, as you all are a statewide organization, what local communities are you seeing that are actually responding and being very, you know, very proactive in terms of making this a high priority for their local community?
Oh, good question. So yes, you do your first 1,000 days in your backyard. So you'll be familiar with that work and what it means for infants and toddlers to have quality relationships in those first 1,000 days, to be read to every night, those types of things. Other communities, what they look like. I mean, I have to do my due diligence and give the shout out to where the children's movement is headquartered, which is in Miami. And in Miami, I have to tell you, I am not from Miami. I'm from, you know, as you know, Jennifer, right outside of Jacksonville in Clay County. And I go there and I'm always struck by how unified that community is. I have sat in meetings where you've got the Children's Service Council and Trust, which are the organization where communities have chosen to tax themselves more, if you can believe it, just to fund early childhood issues. So you've got that CEO right next to the Early Learning Coalition CEO, next to the mayor's office and the county commission and the school district and a number of other philanthropy, nonprofit, and corporate partners. And they're all in a room together regularly talking about what else can they do for early childhood. One of the things that really stands out to me in that community specifically is when we talk about access and affordability to quality early learning experiences, what they have done, which is they have done it and other counties have done it. I can give you a couple of examples there. But their trust has chosen to use those some of those dollars that the taxpayers give to fund above and beyond scholarships for children and families who cannot afford a quality childcare experience on their own, right? So kind of like what you would do with scholarships for children to go to college, they're essentially doing the same thing for the birth to five space. And we've seen this start to happen in Alachua County, where, you know, Gainesville is. So you see it there. You've got communities, Palm Beach County does the same thing. So you've got pockets where this is happening. Jacksonville has a fantastic task force. They are kind of just getting started, but they did a lovely public relations campaign just to raise awareness about enrollment in voluntary pre-kindergarten, right? I talked about that gap between children who go and who do not go. And so they just want to make sure that parents and families were aware that, it actually is really important that your children go to VPK and that you get 3 hours for free. And so now, you know, they're continuing that effort. In the Panhandle, in Pensacola, you've got a mayor who has sort of taken charge in that area and convened leaders. And now they're looking at public buildings to be used just for infant and toddler seats because they realize, again, as we talked about a little bit earlier, often there's less of those seats available for families who might need them. And that's a real problem for the community and for the workforce. And so they're trying to find public space and are actively working on this and bringing in a quality early learning provider to that facility to then serve leaders and children in Pensacola. And so I point out a couple of very different examples of what's going on in local communities because I think it's testament to what can be done. Yep. Right? We often talk about how big the problem is. It does seem sometimes, I think, daunting, but the reality and the truth of the matter is that there are communities who have done some really phenomenal things that can be replicated and scaled.
Yeah, and I like how you gave examples of communities that are urban, large urban, like Miami-Dade, and then you also, you know, included smaller, you know, counties like Alachua. So I think all of that is really terrific. So on the flip side, as you are seeing some of the successes in certain areas within the state, and you also talked about the seat time, you know, the availability of seats for early learning, but getting really focused on like VBK, are we seeing a higher number of students and families taking advantage of a VPK program, and or are we still sitting at a utilization rate that has opportunity for a little bit stronger numbers?
I would say, you know, there's always opportunity for stronger numbers when you're not quite at 100%, right? So the data would suggest there are more children out there. But what we do know is that there are families who are more fluent, who can pay for a private option, who may be getting a quality four-year-old experience above and beyond the roughly 60 to 70% of folks who participate in Florida's VPK program, depending on where you are in the state. And that's okay, right? That's their choice, But in the less affluent areas where transportation might be more of a problem, awareness might be a problem. Some of our rural communities really struggle with these issues. Yes, there's a huge opportunity to increase VPK attendance and participation and ultimately completion, because that's really where the data are showing the significant impacts positively on outcomes. I think the legislature continues to fund and support VPK. I know school districts will often have VPK slots on their site. And so again, I think it's about understanding what the specific needs of the community are, not to go around the question or not answer it directly. But I think we have to really figure out where are the pockets where people are not participating in VPK and sort of dissect that, and rather than paint with a broad brush. Because the issue in a rural community is not the same as the issue in a big city. And so is it really the seats? Is that really the problem? I think kind of going back to the question, or is it a lack of awareness, or is there another barrier that might be keeping a family or a child from accessing it, right? Because the University of Florida, the Anita Zucker Center, did some fantastic research, I guess about 2 years ago now, perhaps a little bit more. But, you know, they found, you know, of the roughly 30% of, you know, families who are not participating in VPK for eligible four-year-olds, you know, the number one reason that they did not participate was that they could not find a slot on their preferred facility, right? So kind of speaking to your question, giving you a little bit of data there. Now, survey results are always kind of wonky, and so it's like, you know, of the 70% of people that actually responded to the survey, you know, many of them, you know, they were looking for very specific locations, and that is likely because it was close to work or it was on their pickup, you know, on their route back home. Specifically when you think about families who cannot afford beyond that 3 hours of VPK, right? We know this is a real struggle for many families. And so what do I mean by that? Like VPK is essentially a voucher is given to every family of a four-year-old, and they get to spend that anywhere they choose, where obviously they can find a slot. And that's typically about 3 hours a day, right? Let's call it 9 to 12. But after 12, you either pick your child up or you have to pay for the wraparound care.
Right, right.
And if you're a family who can't afford it, you know, then you may not send your child at all. And so that's really where I think the opportunities for communities lie, is like, how do we offset the cost of the wraparound care? And perhaps that's going back to that Miami model, right? Like, are there opportunities to create scholarships for families in those types of environments, in those spaces where we know how impactful it will be on K-12 and beyond?
And I do think that the, you know, the local design is the primary function of, is it, can this model work in this particular community? And certainly rural communities have a different host of challenges that, you know, urban communities may have separate ones. So I hear you loud and clear on that. I think I was just looking for the, is the overall trend going, you know, north? Are we seeing generally more kids are enrolling? Because I feel like that would send a message that families are also learning, families and caregivers learning of the value of, the earlier I get my child in for learning, the higher they have over correlation of a positive correlation, you know, for success later in life. So I just, that was what I was kind of keying in on. And so for those community members here, you know, let's just say here in Sarasota that may not have preschool or school age kids, you're making a case that this is certainly a community issue. So why should they care?
We start talking about the, you know, community solutions and being a community issue. I think everybody should care about what's happening in the first 5 years of life and for families, because these are our neighbors, right? These are the people we work with. They might be your employees. They might be your future employees. And so when we think about economic potential of a community and who is going to be your future workforce, we ought to have a stake in ensuring that we have every opportunity for every child to ultimately reach their potential, right? And we've often sort of talked about that in the K-12 space. And I think that's still obviously very important. And both my parents are in the K-12 system and teachers. So certainly so much is going on there. But the reality is that if you really, truly want every kid to be able to reach that fullest potential, we have to care about the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Too many children stop behind. I mean, in our state, you're talking about 43%, just 43% of children entered kindergarten ready this year in the state of Florida. And so when we think about the 57% of children who entered kindergarten ready behind, and then the fact that 75% of them will not catch up, that has implications on reading and comprehension and math, yes, in every other subject area. For me to answer that question, I couldn't be more passionate about it. Mm-hmm. I also think when, you start talking about sort of just, you know, civic engagement and the ability to sort of show up in society, at work, you know, with your neighbors, you know, in our society and be a productive sort of contributing member that way, much of that is in the first 5 years of life where you're learning those foundations of those critical thinking, that problem solving skills, that communication and teamwork that I talked about. And so I go back to that, as I don't think that those sort of employability skills get talked about enough. And I also think, you know, as a community, we're wrestling with a huge mental health crisis too. I think many of us are, you know, talking about this in different arenas. Again, you know, the first couple of years, right, children are either being invested in and having positive early childhood experiences, or they're having adverse early childhood experiences. And the positive ones, as you might imagine, are filled with love and laughter and people who care about that child and are making eye contact with that child and really setting setting up the very basis of forming healthy relationships for their entire life, mm-hmm. or they're having those adverse experiences, which are much more toxic in nature. They are going to lead to a lot of trauma, a lot of challenges that that child may deal with later. And ultimately, right, when we start to think about student outcomes outside of just the mental health, but academically, like we know and have often said, that children have to know that you care, right? They have to know that you love them before they can absorb whatever you're trying to teach them and the things that they're going to learn. And so again, if we take it from the lens of mental health and that being a huge problem and major concern for many, we have a stake in ensuring that whoever that child's interacting with, that those are positive relationships, whether they're mom or another caregiver in the family, or there's somebody outside the family, because the majority of people have to work to afford things, right? So hopefully I answered that one okay, but I think it's, we're starting to, I think, see the impacts of not solving this problem, right? We are seeing pretty stagnant growth in a lot of student outcome areas. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're not investing in the first 5 years of life. And we're trying to remediate, and we're spending a lot of money to do that, right? We're spending a lot of taxpayer money, valid efforts, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, we need to do that. But yet still so many children struggle. So many children have to repeat grades, and some of them never catch up. And so it would behoove us to sort of move away from that, what I will kindly but seriously also call kind of insanity of continuing to do the exact same thing and expecting we're ever going to get a different result, mm-hmm. and start to focus on what the brain science tells us about how important it is that we come together and figure out ways to solve the first couple of years.
You did a great job of really raising the awareness and making a strong case for this. There's no doubt. And I've learned some things even listening to you today. So I'm curious to know, as we're coming to the close of our podcast, is what are some ways that community partners and or our listeners can get involved in shaping early learning policy or doing their part that can help, again, make inroads in something that you've just made a very strong case of why it's so important?
I'll start small and then I'll work a little bit larger. I think first and foremost, you know, in your local communities, there is an early learning coalition, and they are responsible for helping facilitate every early learning experience that is contracted through the state, right? And so you're looking at a group who know a lot about what's happening already for children, the things that are already in place, the free resources. They've got sort of the family helpline if there's, you know, any resources that are needed, and you can direct them to the Early Learning Coalition. And I would really start there to see what are the gaps in your specific community. And then when you think about the state level, right, we're about to be in legislative session at the Children's Movement. You know, we've had our legislative debriefing for last session. We've got our priorities online. But if you want to stay abreast of what's going on, we have legislative updates that we're happy to send folks that can, you know, subscribe on our website. We also have All In for Early Learning Day. It'll be, we're really excited about it, but for sort of the inaugural All In for Early Learning Day on January 26th of 2026. So we've got information about that on our website as well. We'll be having community events all across the state just to say that early learning matters and that it's important and that we should prioritize it and that our legislators and our policymakers should prioritize it. And so we'd encourage everybody to start a local event if, you know, you haven't already heard about it, or join the local event in your community. Check out our priorities. See which ones resonate with you. We'll be pushing out session updates.
Share with our listeners your website so that people can access this information and stay connected with you.
Yeah, thanks. So we've got childrensmovementflorida.org, all spelled out. So that's our main website. And underneath our advocacy tab, you'll find everything from our priorities. If you're a business leader, you'll see information about Bosses for Babies and how you can sign up to be a Bosses for Baby. It's completely free. You're joining a network of over 100 people who are already doing family-friendly practices in their community. And then we'll have a couple of other exciting announcements, I think, to share. And I'll be sure to circle back with you all on relevant for communities who are looking to maybe take a little bit more of a collective impact approach for how can we solve some of these birth to five challenges in the coming weeks.
It's great. That is really good. So yes, listeners, I hope you really do go check out their website. And Michaela, this has been a really informative podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for just giving us a really good insights on why birth to age five, early learning, early childhood development, all the way through so that they are coming prepared and ready for kindergarten. We hope that, again, we can pick it up from there and take it all the way to the end of the continuum. But you certainly, we're all connected in this work. And to your point, it truly is a very collective impact. So, Michaela, thank you for being a part of our podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Michaela, you're a joy. And I just wish the children's movement continued great success. I look forward to seeing the policies that take place with your advocacy. Because again, I'm with you. I'm on board of why this is so important. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in and hearing a little bit more about this specific topic. And certainly hope that you guys will check out any of our episodes on our Education Conversations or wherever you listen into your favorite podcast. Always remember, you can learn more about the Education Foundation on our website at edfoundationsrq.org. I wish everybody, a wonderful day as they, proceed and everything. And just know, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.